Maine's new Secretary of State, Shenna Bellows. When Shenna Bellows took the oath of office in January, she became the first female Secretary of State in Maine history. It's a big job. Her office oversees elections, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and the state archives. Bellows recently made news by testifying before Congress about H.R. 1, which would reform the electoral process, and by certifying the signatures on the latest CMP corridor referendum petition. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with Shenna Bellows about her priorities as Secretary of State, from implementing automatic voter registration to reforming driver fines. What are your questions for Maine's Secretary of State? Shenna Bellows on Maine Calling, next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine's new Secretary of State is a familiar name and face. Shenna Bellows served two terms in the Maine Senate. She most recently was Executive Director of the Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine. She is Maine's first female Secretary of State, and she started the job in January. Shenna Bellows, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
What are your questions for Maine's Secretary of State? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Shenna, welcome. And I understand that your grandmother has lived to see you in this role.
That's right. My grandmother, Margaret Colson DeVoe, is 101 years old. She was born in 1920. It was the year that women gained the right to vote. So it was incredibly meaningful for me and for her to see me become Maine's first female Secretary of State.
Just astonishing. And you know, I know that some people, when they are the first of something, they want to play that down, but you wear that mantle with pride.
I do, and I hope someday that we will see the last of the firsts, but I think representation is incredibly important. One of the goals of my service as Secretary of State is to advance equity and inclusion, and I was very proud to appoint Kate McBrien, our first female state archivist, for example. Former Secretary Matt Dunlap had found her. He had appointed her, but it hadn't gone through the confirmation process, and I completely agreed with him that we were long overdue to have a woman of her qualifications in that leadership role. I appointed the first Latina Deputy Secretary of State, Joanne Bautista. She is going to be working with us on policy, including voting rights policy and advancing equity and inclusion. I think we need to continue to ensure that positions of leadership represent our society.
Shenna, it's been quite a couple months since you took office, and you have been very busy. I want to start with just last week, last Thursday, you testified before Congress. Was that something you expected to be doing so soon? And tell us about what you really hoped to impart when you accepted that slot.
It was an extraordinary honor to be invited to testify before Congress. Because of the pandemic, it was remote via WebEx, and it was before the House Administration Committee. I had participated in the National Association of Secretaries of State National Conference, and we had had a discussion of H.R. 1, which is when the Congress designates something with number one, H.R. 1 or S.R. 1, that means they're giving it an extraordinary level of importance, that it is a priority for them. And this is a democracy reform bill that addresses voting rights, redistricting, and campaign finance reform. And so I was just so honored to testify in support of H.R. 1 to talk about how it really is a watershed moment for American participation in our democracy.
Shenna, I understand that you undertook a listening tour. I'm sure that didn't really involve knocking on doors, but tell us what you learned as a new Secretary of State, listening to the people of Maine? And did you have any surprises? Were there priorities that you didn't quite expect to hear from people?
So first and foremost, I want to say that that listening tour continues. And so if listeners out there represent a community group, whether that's a Rotary Club or a veterans group or really any community-based organization, I would be pleased to join you for a meeting, to have that conversation, to listen to people's ideas about the future. And I started internally. I have been visiting BMV branches all across the state and talking with staff, and then did start having these conversations with the League of Women Voters, for example, with the Clerks Association, with my hometown Rotary, the Ellsworth Rotary. And time again, there is an emerging theme, and that is that the pandemic has revealed great challenges, but also opportunities. And we really need to think about how technology in government, civic technology, can better serve the public. How can we make government work for the people? And how can we leverage technology to increase efficiency and increase service? And so that's something that's very exciting to me. I've been a long-time advocate on issues like privacy and cybersecurity. So to have those conversations with community groups and think through how can we build on some of our successes. You know, a lot of folks don't realize, for example, that you can renew your vehicle registration or your driver's license or ID card online through the Secretary of State's office. And so how do we go to the next level and take those technology improvements and implement that across our services?
Shenna, as you know better than anyone, as you have accepted this job in a time in great scrutiny of elections in the U.S. and a lot of suspicion, a lot of skepticism. We hear a lot of supporters of the former president who still believe that there was widespread election fraud. How do you speak to people who believe there was widespread election fraud, and how do you guarantee the security of elections here in Maine going forward?
Well, I think demystifying the process is really important. One of the things I testify before Congress about are the gold standard in election security is paper ballots. And Maine has paper ballots with a clear chain of custody from issuance by our office to the clerks to mailing to absentee voters. And remember, in Maine, 62% of Mainers voted absentee. Return of those ballots, we have an online tracking system. So from the time that a voter requests an absentee ballot, they can track the progress of that ballot. And then there are simple measures that people don't really think about, but that are incredibly important from an election security perspective. So for example, when you go to the polls on election day, you are asked to state clearly your name and address. And the poll workers there check your name off the voter participation list. And then you're issued a ballot, and you go into the booth, and you fill out your ballot, and then you cast your ballot into the tabulator in many towns. So most towns in Maine have these ESNS machine tabulators, although some towns are still doing hand counts. So let's talk about security for a minute. That voter participation list, if you're casting your ballot via absentee, for example, whether it's in a drop box, in person, or through the mail, clerks are also checking off that they have received your ballot and that you voted. Those lists are compared against the tallies when the votes are counted to make sure that the number of people who were checked off those lists matches the number of people and votes cast. Similarly, those lists get reported back to the Central Voter Registration System, which is maintained by the Office of Secretary of State. So we can immediately see who voted and ensure that no one voted twice. And again, check the number of voters who participated against the tally of votes cast. So that right there is an example of election security. I could go on. Should I talk about this? should I wait?
Well, let's wait for a second and cover some other topics because there are so many. And
yes,
one of them
absolutely.
Is automatic voter registration. The legislature passed this in 2019. I know that you support it. Tell me, one, What can we expect when we hear the term automatic voter registration? What does that mean? Automatically when we get our driver's license? What about automatically when we get our passport, or automatically when we sign a lease for an apartment or a house? And also, whatever it means and however you explain it, when will this be implemented?
I love automatic voter registration, and this is the idea that people would be opting out rather than opting in to register to vote. And because the Secretary of State's office oversees the Bureau of Motor Vehicles as well as elections, we're starting under the law with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. And so how it would work starting in 2023 is our hope, is that when you go to the BMV and you go to renew a license or get a license for the first time, or perhaps do any other function, you would be, we're going to be installing a little tablet that you might use to swipe your credit card or to input the information about yourself into our system and register to vote in that moment if you are not previously registered. A lot of states are doing this around the country, and the goal is to try to make it as easy as possible for people to register to vote, to make it so that they don't really have to think about it. Some states are starting to look at other services and when this automatic voter registration can occur. There is a companion measure that Maine has not yet implemented, but I'm in conversations with legislators, including the sponsor, Representative Teresa Peirce, about online voter registration. So imagine if you could register to vote from the comfort of your own home. That's something that we're not yet prepared to implement, but we're excited to work with the legislature to move forward.
A 2015 law, Shetta, requiring Maine petition circulators to be registered voters and residents was recently struck down in U.S. District Court by Judge John Woodcock. Will you appeal that, and will you appeal it to the First Circuit Court of Appeals?
Yes, we've already filed our notice of appeal with the court. We will be appealing that decision. We believe the right to petition under the Maine Constitution is really special. It's about the Maine citizenry's right to bring forward legislative ideas. That's how we restored same-day voter registration in 2011 with the People's Veto at the time. I co-chaired that campaign. It's how Maine has ranked choice voting. But it is designed to be a process by the people of Maine. And that's why we think it's important that the petition circulators be residents and registered voters of the state.
Let's talk a little bit about Real ID, Shetta. I know that in one of your former positions with the ACLU of Maine, you opposed the implementation of Real ID, but it is coming to Maine and coming soon. You will now be implementing something that you've opposed in the past. Tell me how you plan to protect privacy rights, and what else we need to know as citizens of Maine about Real ID as we move through 2021.
This is a great example of how the difference between the role of a legislator in advocating for a particular policy or against a particular policy and the role of Secretary of State. And first and foremost, my role is to serve the public, to administer the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, the Bureau of Elections, Corporations and Commissions, and the Maine State Archives to serve all of the people of Maine, regardless of my individual views on a particular topic. So in Maine, I think we struck a really perfect balance. We have both the Real ID that we offer at any one of our BMV branches, or you can get a more privacy-compliant license, shall we say, that is not Real ID compliant. So someone actually just emailed me the other day and said, why does my license say not for federal purposes? Well, that's because that license is not Real ID compliant. Now, the Real ID becomes very important because it's a federal mandate if you want to fly, enter a federal building, or a nuclear power plant, which hopefully that latter you don't want to do. But you do need either a passport card, or a Real ID starting October 1, 2021, to fly within the United States or obviously beyond, and to enter a federal building. And so we really do want the people of Maine to know that, and to know that they can get their real ID by going to the BMV branches. And on our website, we do have information about the documentation that's required. And this is where privacy comes in, because you will need, for example, the Real ID requires proof of citizenship. And for people who are born in the United States, that means a certified copy of your birth certificate. So another constituent on my listening tour said, you know, why wasn't my birth certificate good enough? And the answer was, the federal government is requiring that that be certified, that it be issued by your state of origin. So definitely folks should go on our website, check out the criteria for the Real ID, and head to a BMV branch to get your Real ID. We are open 5 days a week. You do not need an advance appointment, or get a passport or passport card now.
And Shanna, let me ask you this. If someone perhaps is planning a trip for this fall and will be traveling on an airplane and is hearing this for the first time and thinking about it, when should he or she think about when to get this Real ID? How long is it going to take to get it?
Well, we always encourage people to go in advance. So if you're already thinking about a trip next fall, go now. But we did have a representative reached out to us on behalf of a constituent who was planning a trip for the following week and realized to her horror that she did not have the Real ID and so needed to renew her license. And we were able to turn that around in 2 days. So we can absolutely make this work, assuming that the person has the appropriate documentation that's in compliance with the federal requirements. We can rush that if we need to, although the rush Real ID happens out of the Augusta office.
Are there ways to renew your Real ID without going to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles in person? A lot of people are trying to avoid contact right now.
The Real ID, no. The non-Real ID compliant driver's license, you can renew right online on our website, as well as the non-compliant ID card. So if you're not traveling by plane, or if you're not entering a federal building, you should feel free to renew your regular driver's license. Additionally, the process of applying for renewal of a passport or passport card is something that you can do through the mail. So there are ways to avoid going to the BMV to get credentialing that you might need to board a plane. But unfortunately, if you need a Real ID under the requirements of the law, we will need you to go to a BMV office. But people should rest assured, we do have precautions in place, including mask requirements, 6 feet social distancing, plexiglass barriers between members of the public and the personnel who are processing the paperwork. So people should feel that we are doing everything that we can to protect public safety.
And just to be clear, if you already have a passport and you're planning to travel, that is sufficient, correct?
That's right. I, for example, have a passport, and that's what I will be using when I travel. And I have my regular Maine driver's license that I think protects privacy. But if you want a Real ID, we want to help you get that.
We are going to take a quick break. We are speaking with Maine Secretary of State Shanna Bellows. If you have a question for her, you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can post a comment to our Facebook page, tweet at Maine Calling, or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Seth Rigoletti, leadership coach, helping organizations and individuals inspire and engage through personal coaching and workshops at sethrigoletti.com. And Bristol Seafood's Fair Trade North Atlantic Wild Scallops, harvested from the Gulf of Maine and found in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
on the next Radio Lab, co-host Latif Nasser shares his name with exactly one other person.
Detainee 244 at Guantanamo Bay.
And our Latif spent 3 years obsessed with finding out how the other Latif ended up there.
I think he worked on Osama bin Laden's farm.
Is he the worst of the worst? Or was he just at the wrong place at the wrong time? Join us for the third episode in our 6-part series, The Other Latif.
And you can hear Radio Lab this evening at 11 o'clock. Today's main CDC briefing with Dr. Nirav Shah will be heard at a special time this afternoon at 1. The briefings are still on a Tuesday-Thursday schedule, and the special 1 o'clock start time is for today only. Tune in to Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, or the Maine Public Facebook page at 1 this afternoon for the live update. The CDC briefings are also archived at our website for later on-demand viewing. Once again, the Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus today at 1 on Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and on Facebook.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. I'm speaking with Shenna Bellows. She is Maine's new Secretary of State, and she is talking about her top priorities. Share your comments or questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to start with an email from Sandra. She asks, please thank Secretary of State Shenna Bellows and her team for thoroughly reviewing 25,000 pages of signed petitions for the No CMP Corridor referendum. What is her response to the CMP team, to CMP sending a team to photocopy the entire filing to check the Secretary of State review? Does she anticipate a complaint coming from CMP?
So the Elections Division of the Bureau of Corporations, Elections and Commissions completed the process of certifying the petitions for the Corridor Initiative and found 80,506 valid signatures. So just to remind folks, the minimum requirement is 63,067 signatures from registered Maine voters. So it is absolutely within the rights of opponents of any petition to come to our office and to review the petitions and review our work in certifying those petitions. It would be shocking and very unlikely that given that 80,506 signatures have been found to be valid, that enough of those would be thrown out to fall below the minimum threshold to move forward.
We will go to Jim calling from Winthrop. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Thank you. With all of the talk about fraud in elections and their concerns, wouldn't, rather than having an election day, have an election week where people would have meet their own schedule and still have the right to vote in person, thus alleviating people's concerns?
This is one of the things I testified before Congress about. H.R. 1 includes measures for early voting 15 days prior to the election. And what I shared with Congress is that Maine permits people to vote in person, no excuse absentee voting, at least 30 days prior to Election Day at the clerk's office through the Thursday prior to Election Day. And we really have found that voters appreciate that convenience of being able to go in person to cast an absentee ballot prior to Election Day. Now, a commission and pilot project out of this office under my predecessors found that true early voting, that is eliminating the process of absentee voting and just allowing people to go and cast a ballot at the clerk's office prior to Election Day, would reduce cost, processing time, and increase efficiency and convenience for the voter. However, at the time when this idea was first being explored back in 2008, there was an opinion that that would contradict a provision in the Maine Constitution that specifies the election day as being the first Tuesday in November. And so we are supporting a constitutional amendment. There is actually a public hearing on this next week to allow early voting in Maine. Whether that moves forward or not is unclear. I think that what we have seen when this has been voted on in the past is that it falls short of the two-thirds requirement of the legislature. However, if H.R. 1 passes, the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution would mean that early voting would be implemented in Maine. Given that 62% of Maine voters voted absentee in 2020, I think it is clear that the public appreciates the convenience of being able to vote ahead of Election Day.
Aaron on Facebook asks, when will administrative hearings to consider reinstating revoked licenses begin again? My client's hearing request has been pending for over a year.
So our hearings division has been holding remote hearings on some matters. And so I can't give specific legal advice, especially to an attorney, over a radio show. But what I can encourage them to do is to contact the Office of Secretary of State. Our telephone number is 626-8400, really easy. Again, that's 626-8400, and we can certainly get a specific answer to you. And I appreciate hearing about that delay, and we will continue to do our very best to serve the public.
And Shanna, let me follow up with a broader question. I know that reform of some driving laws is one of your priorities. What do you hope to do in your tenure as Secretary of State?
I'm so glad you asked this question, because one of my concerns is that suspension of driver's licenses has become a very punitive measure. We suspend driver's license for people's failure to pay court fees and fines, for example. And we took a big step forward with legislation in the last legislature, but there is still more work to be done in this area. I think it's really important to make sure our motor vehicle laws are not punishing people for poverty.
A tweet here from Ellie. Why are you talking like the Real ID is somehow an invasion of privacy? I thought the Real ID was a tool to verify identity beyond a regular license. And Shanna, the concern is really some sort of hack, correct?
That's right, because the Real ID requires that you submit documentation, including your proof of citizenship, including your birth certificate, including your Social Security, proof of your Social Security number, usually your Social Security card, and two forms of residency. And it requires that the state maintain much of that information in a centralized database and share that information with the federal government. And so in an era of increasing identity theft and then use of data obtained through identity theft for impersonation, we saw this, for example, with unemployment fraud, where identity thieves have stolen millions of dollars from states across the country through false impersonation and unemployment fraud. So we see that there are real consequences to identity theft, and any time you have a centralized database, when I was at the ACLU, I used to say it's not a question of if, but when that data will be breached and to what consequence. And so we do everything that we can at the BMV. We have an amazing IT team that works very hard to protect consumer data, and we are constantly working to improve our cybersecurity. But just the collection of that data does raise concerns.
We will go to East Pittston and Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. Steve, are you there? Go ahead.
Well, yes, I am. Thank you very much for taking my call, Jennifer.
Great. What's your question for the Secretary of State?
Well, you know, I really don't have a question for her. I just wanted to call quickly and thank her so much for her professional and efficient caring for the No NEC EC petition drive. That could have taken a heck of a long time, and Secretary Bellows, in my opinion, did a fabulous job, and I'd like to thank her for that.
That is awfully kind of you. And really, the true thanks go to the staff at the Division of Elections. They worked overtime, including President's Day weekend, to turn those petitions around. They are true professionals, and they love their work, and we're really lucky to have them.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks for your call. And a follow-up question, Shanna, just a point of clarification. It is likely that we will see the CMP referendum question on the November ballot, correct?
That's correct. The legislature has the option of passing the petition into law directly or referring it to the ballot for a vote in November.
All right. We have an email here from Tony, the owner of the Paris Auto Barn. He says, it's been a while since we last saw you at our business. I hope all is well and congrats on your new position. What changes do you have in mind, if any, that will help to promote the use of electric vehicles in Maine? Any plans to discount registrations for electric vehicle drivers? Any plans for a special EV plate in Maine, similar to what's available in Massachusetts?
Those are great ideas that I'm hearing for the first time, and I would welcome Tony's thoughts and thoughts from environmentalists about what powers the Secretary of State might have or what the legislature might do. I will tell you that we are working with a representative who reached out to us about driver's education and what we are sharing with young people about emissions and sort of a green driver's ed, making sure that there's a component of that. And additionally, I will say that in looking at our fleet, because members of the Secretary of State's team, including myself, have access to state vehicles, I asked the question, are electric vehicles an option for us as we're engaged in our official duties and official travel around the state? So excited to hear that.
We'll go to Beth and Deidre. Hi, Deidre, go ahead.
Hi there. I was wondering how or when would you renew your voter registration? Is that only when you move or when you renew your license or what?
So it's when you move. So for as long as your address stays exactly the same, you remain registered in the state of Maine. We think that's really important. We are proud of the fact that we have some of the highest levels of voter registration and voter participation in the country. In the last election, 75% of Maine voters actually participated in the November 2020 election. That put us at third in the country, which is just so incredibly exciting. But if you do move, you should absolutely change your registration. And we do engage in what's called voter list maintenance. We'll be doing that this year, where we send out postcards to people that have not voted in the past two federal elections. And we then make voters inactive in accordance with federal law when through that process we discover that people are no longer living at the address where they were previously registered.
And Shanna, is this going to be the first time Maine has done this?
No. Voter list maintenance is something that we do on a regular basis. And it's part of the job of the Secretary of State is trying to make sure that those voter lists are up to date. We are taking some additional measures this time around to really try to be as comprehensive and thorough as possible.
And what kind of measures are those?
So we are doing it universally. We are sending these postcards literally to everyone. In the past, what we have done is matched up. For example, we've looked at what's called the National Change of Address matches. We've done that. Every month, we actually look at monthly death records. That's something that we do. But to do a mailing to everyone who hasn't voted in the last two elections, and also to go back and look. So this might be a fact that folks don't know. Prior to 2007, Maine's voter lists were paper-based. Every town had their individual voter file. In 2007, we created the Central Voter Registration System, and we took all of the information from all of the towns and put that all together in a central voter registration system. So we'll also be going back and looking at people who may have been added to that system at that time who don't show any activity.
And when will people, when can people expect to begin receiving these postcards?
We don't have a date yet for the mailing, but this is definitely something that we'll be doing this spring and summer.
All right. Well, Deidre, thank you so much. Deidre, thank you so much for your question. If you have a question for Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on today's Facebook post, or send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Hospice of Southern Maine, inviting you to attend this year's Thresholds Conference online with Dr. B.J. Miller and Barbara Carnes. HospiceofSouthernMaine.org.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Actor Jared Leto talks with us about his eerie role in the crime drama The Little Things. Leto initially had misgivings about his performance.
I remember after the first take, I thought, wow, I just really blew it. This is terrible. I've ruined the movie, and I have to help them find a new person for the part.
That's next time on Here and Now.
And you can join us for Here and Now coming up in about 20 minutes at noon. From the Top is a national radio program that shares stories and performances of outstanding classically trained musicians ages 8 to 18. Here in Maine, From the Top is heard every Saturday afternoon at 5 on Maine Public Classical. On March 12th and 13th, From the Top will be holding virtual auditions for young musicians from Maine. If you are interested in auditioning or know a young Maine musician who might be, visit fromthetop.org/apply. Again, that's fromthetop.org/apply for all the details.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and I'm speaking with new Secretary of State, Shenna Bellows. She's here to talk about voting, motor vehicles, and the plans she has in the months ahead. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. A tweet here from Susan. What if you have been asked to serve on a jury in a federal trial and don't have a real ID? Are you exempt from serving?
That's a great question. And I'm sorry I can't answer that. But if that was a tweet, we can try to answer on Twitter.
Okay, that sounds great. It is. An email here from Jay. This is another stumper. And I'm sorry about this, Shenna.
Okay.
I live in Westbrook, but lived in Sedgwick for 17 years. It is my understanding that the town meeting house there is the oldest voting station in the U.S. under one roof. Do you know if this can be documented?
I do know that we can try to find that out. The Maine State Archives is an amazing resource. It's one of my favorite unsung parts of the job. We have about 1 million records in our custody, 56,000 boxes, which unfortunately we know because the cultural building in Augusta had some huge failures with the HVAC and mold and things, and we had to evacuate it. But we have some very cool historical records, and our archivists would be happy to track that down for this gentleman. I took a tour and got to see Maine's oldest document, which is the charter for Maine from King Charles I to Sir Ferdinando Gorges, dating back to 1639. And there's just some really wonderful materials in Maine State Archives. It's underutilized, and we are here to serve. It's a free service. That's exactly the type of research that our archivists love to do.
An email here from Bruce. Back in 2004, then Representative Hannah Pingree asked me to write a bill. This is from Bruce Cole. That would require Maine's electronic voting machinery to incorporate voter-verified paper ballots, outlaw internet voting, and several other provisions. Most of the original bill was passed over two sessions, but one provision that didn't make it was a random sample audit feature. Over the intervening years, I had lobbied Secretary Dunlap to work to make voting machinery audits happen, but to no avail. I am therefore grateful that the part of the platform that you ran for on your for your current position was to remedy that shortcoming in Maine's otherwise stellar voting tabulating system. My question is this: can a demonstration project be set up to show your office and Maine voters how such a system could work using ballots from our last election cycle 4 months ago? My understanding is the ballots have not been discarded, making such a demonstration possible.
It's certainly something that we're willing to have a conversation about. As Bruce mentions, I've been a huge supporter of post-election audits. I think audits are a security measure that helps to increase public confidence. It allows us to go back and look and see how the election functioned. Now, of course, in Maine, our recounts have served as informal audits and time again demonstrated that our elections have been successful and very secure and accurate. And I think people can have a lot of confidence in that. I know there is legislation as well, sponsored by Representative Nicole Grahowski from Ellsworth, and written in part with collaboration with the League of Women Voters, to look at post-election audits. And our office was tasked by the last legislature to study this issue. Sometimes it comes down to resources and staffing. So a lot of folks don't realize that our elections team is we just hired a new person who just started this week, but that puts us at 8 people supervised by our amazing Deputy Secretary of State, Julie Flynn. And they do a tremendous amount of work. They worked an incredible amount of overtime last year, 73 weeks of overtime to be specific. And so anytime we take on new policy initiatives, we just have to think about resources and how do we meet the needs of the office and how do we best serve the public.
We'll go to Eric, who's calling from Charleston. How are you, Eric?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
My question was on HR1. Ms. Bellow seems to be quite in favor of it. And I can just tell you what I've read in the newspaper. But according to what I've read, they want to make mail-in ballots the norm. And they also said specifically in the law that they won't require signature verification. Now, people like Jimmy Carter 2 decades ago, when he did a bipartisan election integrity commission, they said that mail-in ballots were very problematical. Barack Obama said just a few years ago in a speech that you really couldn't trust an election that had mail-in ballots without signature verifications. I mean, without signature verifications on these mail-in ballots, we have no way of knowing whether the ballots are real or not. I mean, in today's world, when anybody can that has a computer and a digital photocopier, you can copy as many ballots as you want and just drop them off at these boxes. And with voters having no voter ID as well when they come in to vote, I mean, how are people supposed to have faith that the elections were honest and above boards? I mean, to me, the election we just had, there's kind of like two lies. I mean, the Trump people lied when they said that the election was stolen, but the Democrats, when they say it was the most above board elections in the history of our country, when we don't have pre-scanned signatures, we just opened up all of these mail-in ballots and counted them. But we don't know if they were valid, if some people voted 10 times or 100 times. And I'd like to know if Ms. Bellows...
Sure, Eric, I'm going to give Shanna a chance to respond. Go ahead, Shanna.
Sure. There's a lot in Eric's concerns, and some of it is just simply not true. So, for example, you can't just go photocopy ballots and then submit them. We have a careful chain of custody for all of the ballots issued by the state of Maine to the clerks and then to the voters. We know where those ballots are. Second, in Maine, actually, you do sign a voter registration card when you register to vote, and you do sign the envelope when you cast an absentee ballot and mail back your ballot. And under HR1 does not mandate mail-in voting, nor does it mandate what it says about signature verification is that if a state requires signature verification and determines that a signature discrepancy exists, that it must be at least 2 election officials who make that determination and that they must have received training. So I think that is important. It's important check and balance because it protects against an individual official discarding ballots or throwing out the votes of voters without that check and balance of a second person determining that the signature was in fact different than the signature of the voter on their voter registration card.
All right, Eric, thanks for calling. And with that question, I think others have as well. We're going to move to Bill calling from Washington. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
How are you all today? I have a question about has there ever been any talk about re-looking at the driver examination, such as parallel parking, which I know a lot of people have had a lot of trouble with. And you don't really need to know how to parallel park today. I wonder if she could address that.
You know, when I was taking driver's ed in Ellsworth and went for my license for the first time at the BMV in Ellsworth, which is almost in the same location that it was when I was there back in the 90s, I loathed parallel parking. And having grown up in Hancock, Maine, where you definitely didn't need to know how to parallel park, I just did not understand it at all. And so I sympathize. But I went on after college to live in Washington, D.C., and then when I moved back home to Maine to live in Portland, and realized very quickly that when you're driving in a city, then parallel parking does become something that you need. Now, I will say our driver's license examiners are amazing. They're doing approximately 1,000 driver license examinations each week all across Maine, and that's both for first-time licensees and for commercial truck drivers, for example, and they do a great job. Our tests are in accordance with the federal law. So some of these requirements are federal requirements, and I know that our driver's license examination unit is always looking to make sure we're as up-to-date as possible, and to your point, are trying to make sure that what we are asking of people applying for their license is what is necessary.
Bill, thanks so much for your question. Going to Jody on Facebook, she writes, I saw something about states with bills to restrict voting, and Maine appeared to be one of them. Can you discuss what that bill is and why it's been put forward? What do we know about efforts to restrict voting here in Maine, Shenna?
So we see a perennial bill, and that is to require a photographic ID when you actually vote at the polls. So right now in Maine, of course you need an ID and proof of residence when you register to vote. But that isn't a requirement when you cast your vote. And the concern about that is there are many concerns about voter ID, but one of the concerns is that this would result in people who are legitimately registered and citizens unable to vote on election day. And so that is definitely a voter suppression measure that we've seen here in our state. We haven't seen some of the same measures that we've seen all across the country. It is very alarming. For example, the no-excuse absentee voting that we enjoy here in Maine that 62% of Mainers participated in, Georgia had that as well, and now they're looking to repeal that, and that, I think, is unconscionable.
This is a tweet from Bender. With the proliferation of all the misinformation and conspiracy theories regarding the U.S. election, is Maine planning to do any review of the current state social studies curriculum to focus on digital media literacy? I know that Pender Macon is the head of the Department of Education here in Maine, Shenna, but I'm wondering about your thoughts on civics education.
We stand ready to virtually visit your classroom. We are happy, especially our Maine State Archive staff is happy to bring primary source documents, for example, as resources into the classroom. And our team is definitely willing to engage with teachers and the educational community about civics education. Our team met with Commissioner Macon earlier this week, actually, about looking at supporting some of the education that happens around Maine history. And so these are definitely ideas that we're excited about. We're also mindful that it is the Department of Education that oversees the curriculum and that local control is a really big deal in Maine as well. But what we want to do is be a resource. And the Secretary of State's website has some great resources for people interested in civics, and definitely encourage you, people to check that out at maine.gov/SOS, maine.gov/SOS for Secretary of State. Check out our civic education resources.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to Standish and Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Shanna. Thank you for doing a great job in protecting our democracy and Republican form of government. I wanted to speak to car registration. I bought a used car for my daughter a few years ago, and it had some safety recalls. Excuse me. And the used car dealer was not obligated to correct those. I was able to do it, and, of course, it was no cost. The dealer handled it. But I don't think that dealers and new and used car dealers should be allowed to sell cars or offer cars for sale that have safety recalls that are outstanding. I think that's it's a safety recall for a reason. There's a problem that might be injurious to the driver, passengers, or the public on the road. And so I would urge you to take a look at car registration requirements and safety recalls, and seek to have Maine require new and used car dealers, and perhaps anyone else, to resolve safety recalls before cars can be registered, and that the dealers should not sell cars that have safety recalls because they're unsafe.
Thank you for that, and definitely encourage you to reach out to your local legislator as well. A lot of folks don't realize the Bureau of Motor Vehicles does, in fact, handle motor vehicle dealer licensing. We have a dealer section that issues and maintains the records of all licensed dealers in the state and carries out the legal requirements under the law.
Bob, thanks so much
for
your question. Yeah, we're really tight on time, but I want to get to, we had a caller who had to drop, who said Shenna's leadership of the Holocaust and Human Rights Center was remarkable. And I wanted to give you that compliment, wants to know if you'll still be involved with that organization. And Shenna, we really just have a half a minute left, but I wanted to ask how your work at the Holocaust and Human Rights Center has informed your work now.
My work at the Holocaust and Human Rights Center was an extraordinary experience, and the stories of the survivors really remind me and inform me as I think about the fragility of democracy and the vital importance of carrying it forward into the future and also carrying that message of racial justice and social justice forward. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody who called today. And thank you, Shenna Bellows, for joining us today on Maine Calling. Shenna Bellows is Maine's new Secretary of State. She took office in January. She also served in the Maine Senate as head of the Holocaust and Human Rights Center and is Maine's first female Secretary of State. Today's sound engineer was John Keimel. Maine Calling airs tonight at 7, the rebroadcast at 7. Tomorrow on the program, we will talk with transgender Mainers who are making a difference. We will learn about their experiencing, what they are experiencing and what challenges they face. That's tomorrow on Maine Calling. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.